Last time, what we did was to build what people call the covariant phase space. So how did it work? We started from a Lagrangian. Then we took its variation, and we saw that its variation has two pieces, the equations of motion and the presymplectic potential current. From the equations of motion, one defines the shell, which is the space of solutions to the equations of motion. So I write it like this. And it's a subspace of field space. So what is this? This is the top zero form on the space of fields over spacetime. Now, whereas from the second piece, one builds the presymplectic current, which is nothing else than the variation of this theta. So this is a top minus one, because there is a d in front, and a two form on field space. Then we prove this theorem, which is in fact quite straightforward. One just takes the double variation of the Lagrangian and evaluates it on shell. And one finds that the presymplectic current is conserved on shell. Of course, on shell here is a crucial ingredient. And using this, we argued that the space of on-shell histories, on-shell configurations, equipped with the pullback of, well, first we do an integration. We take a Cauchy surface sigma, and we integrate our presymplectic current on sigma. Since this is conserved, this object is independent of the choice of sigma. And so we end up with an object which is a two-form on field space, and there's no space-time form degree left because we integrated over space-time. And so we have something that has the formal structure of a symplectic phase space. So we have a space, a manifold, let's say, infinite dimensional, together with a two-form on that manifold. So this is an omega 2 of f. That's where it lives. Pull back to f bar, we obtain this. And this is what people call a covariant phase space. We never proved that this two form is non-degenerate, but we saw it in certain applications. In fact, that happens when more, I don't know if it is a theorem, but all the cases we saw didn't have gauge symmetries. And so in fact, when there are gauge symmetries, there is one more step that one has to take care of, for sure. So, but we saw it for both a scalar field and a particle in mechanics. The two were pretty much the same. And we also saw that, for example, in particle mechanics, this space is a finite dimensional space, whereas this F is always infinite dimensional, is a space of histories. OK, any questions about this? No? Good. So today we're going to add symmetries on top of all of this and see what comes out. So okay. So first, as we did in the finite, when it is symplectic geometry in finite dimensions and so on, what we needed to talk about symmetries was an algebra and an action of this algebra on our phase space. So we do the same thing here. We take G, a Lie algebra. And now I will work today mostly with G, with the finite dimensional G in mind. But in fact, anything I say, or at least most of what I say, has direct generalization if it is infinite dimensional. Infinite dimensional Lie algebras are interesting for gauge theories. But so these are what we have in mind mostly today's global symmetries. We will talk about gauge symmetries next time. So then we have an action, which is a map from G over vector fields over field space. So, and we demand this to be a Lie algebra homomorphism. So this is the action. Symmetry action. Well, we don't know if it is a symmetry yet, but an action on F. Which by definition is a Lie algebra homomorphism, which means that the bracket on the Lie algebra is mapped over the bracket of vector fields. Now remember how we using our kind of formal notation to denote vector fields, we can think of these as being this kind of object where this is an integral over M, and we call this. Now remember, this is a very formal notation. For example, if we apply it to a function over a field space, this becomes df over d phi. But this, remember, was an operator because there can be also derivatives acting on this. So this is just whatever the components of the symmetries are. And just to give, a simple example just to fix the ideas. In particle mechanics, we have, of course, Q of t is our history, and the translation symmetry translations are an object that takes this Q and sums to it just Xi. And the way I could write it is, for example, if I have F, which is, I don't know, the integral of Q dot square, let's say, and then I say rho Xi of F, this would be the integral of df over d phi Xi. So this is, if you want, also delta Xi of Q. Let me write it like this. Oops. Qi. And this is Q dot times dt of Xi, which is zero. Because this is identical. Because this is a translation here, I mean, G is just R3. Okay. Does that make sense? So just a simple example to show that this is an operator, because it's all this block is Q dot dt. So this cannot be understood just as a function. Okay, now, we want to define when this action is a symmetry. So what do we have? We have a Lagrangian, which is our starting point for all our story here. So we want to impose a condition between this action and the Lagrangian. So, definition of Lagrangian, or maybe Noetherian if you prefer, symmetry. So G rho acting on F is said a symmetry of L if and only if. Well, if the following happens, this is a definition. There exists an R, which is a linear map from G to top minus one zero forms here, such that, and here is the formula that one needs to remember. Okay, so this is the key formula. So what are we saying here? We are saying the variation of the Lagrangian along our symmetry action is a boundary term. So the Lagrangian is invariant up to boundary pieces. This is just the usual definition repackaged in our language. Yes?
What's the symbol you have written in the beginning?
This is the lead derivative over field space. It's an L.
Okay.
It's a double L. So since this is a function over field space, I could have just written rho acting on it. I find it a little bit clearer like that for reasons that we will see in a moment. But it would have been exactly the same. If you want, in more standard or maybe language, this would be like this. Right, is the variation of the Lagrangian is a boundary term. Okay, so we will use these just to build everything. Now, I said in words that this map has to be linear because rho is linear. So that's just it's a property inherited from rho. So we could even say that this valued in the dual if we wanted. Now, an important remark is that this is an off-shell definition. So nowhere I impose the shell. The shell will come out later when we talk about the properties, some properties that we will deduce from this equation. But for now, this is completely off-shell. So, okay, now we have our two ingredients. We said what we mean by symmetry once we have a Lagrangian. But from the Lagrangian, we derive two basic objects, E and theta. And so we want to understand the interplay of this definition with these two objects. So the first question one should ask is whether this off-shell symmetry is also a symmetry of the shell. So here we just said, oh, we have a Lagrangian. We take vary our fields along this action and this symmetry, and we get a boundary term. But is this action preserving the shell? Right? So it is mapping solution into solutions. Question, is rho xi mapping solutions into solutions? So say differently, is rho xi tangent to f bar? So remember, we had this idea of Jacobi field as a field that preserves the equations of motion, and this is what we're going to check. A Jacobi field that is L rho xi preserves E. Okay, so here we have this proposition or theorem. L rho xi of E is equal to zero. So let's say we check that the question to the answer to the previous question is positive. So this, I will not do this proof. You can find it in the notes. It's a bit more complicated than one would expect, because so far all the proofs that we gave were half a line proofs. This is not. It's a bit more technical. I will let it aside for now. But the thing I want to emphasize is that although the abstract proof is a bit complicated, in practice it's quite straightforward usually. If I give you an example, you will not even think about this might be a problem. Why? Because you write your Lagrangian in terms of objects that transforms naturally under the symmetry. So you usually have what one would say a covariant formalism, where the symmetry is embedded into the way you write the equations. And so then you write the equations of motion. You will have covariant derivatives that show that whatever symmetry is manifestly implemented also in the equations of motion. So I don't know. If you work with particle mechanics, where you have rotation symmetry and translation symmetry, you will use vectors and dot products, vector products, and so on. And so the equations of motion will be manifestly covariant under your symmetry, which means that the action of the symmetry will preserve the shell. So it's usually more straight. The abstract proof is complicated, but in practice, it's just to say that the equations of motion are also covariant. What do we need this for? Well, remember, one important quantity that we were interested in studying was the flow of our symmetries. So we wanted to compute this kind of object. But this, where are we really interested in this object is not so much over the space of off-shell histories, but is on the space of on-shell history. And there is this pullback to the shell. So the question is whether I can pull back this to the shell after contraction or before contraction. And this is saying that we can do as we please. Okay? Because our vector is tangent to the surface, so it doesn't matter if we don't. So the picture is the following. So there is the shell over here. So this is F bar. Oops. Let's do it in orange, maybe. This is F bar. This is F. And it means that our vector, our rows, are along the surface. So, and here maybe they can also go where they want. It doesn't really matter. But along there, they stay on the surface. So that's what we checked in pictures. Questions? I see some perplexed faces.
Sorry, we accepted it without the proof now, right?
Yeah, I'll do it without proof, this statement.
Like the remark follows on the proposition.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a corollary, maybe. Okay. So what we're saying is that these vectors are tangent to the shell, so their contractions commute with pullback, essentially, because they're already lying on the surface, at the surface. Okay?
So, yeah. Does this presymplectic form somehow encode this R here, the total derivative? Is that what?
No. This is a different. In a sense, yeah, yes and no. We will see the relationship between this R and omega in a moment. that's a cont that, yeah. But so far, so what is the relationship between this proposition and this remark is the fact that the shell is preserved, and so this commutes with this. Here I could have put any two form, in fact, or any n form. It's just the fact that these two commute. So it means that I can work off shell where its computations are easy and pull back at the end. Okay, next, let's go up here. Now we are ready to state Noether's first theorem. Which states the following. We say rho g acting on f equipped with L is a Lagrangian symmetry. Now we define the following object. Which we call the Noether current. So you see so this J, what is this J? This J is a linear map between G and what do we get? We get a top minus one, zero form. Right? So this was a top minus one form, and this is a top minus one form. So it's a current in that way. So that's why we call it a current. And now the theorem says, let this be that, then dj is zero on shell. So Noether's current is conserved on shell. Of course, this is true for all choice of psi.
Which D is that? Hmm? Which exterior derivative is that?
This one?
Yeah.
The spacetime. So this is in the spacetime conservation. Okay, the proof, once again, it's a one-line proof. So the trick here is to start from the only thing we have is our definition of a Lagrangian symmetry, is the only hypothesis in the theorem, so that's where we need to start. And we write that equation in two different ways. One is the defining equation for R, which is telling us what a symmetry is. And the other one, we just use the variation of L in terms of equations of motion and theta, which is the other. So we have two equations, we use both. So of L, this is the R of Xi on one side, and this, by Cartan's formula, this is nothing else than the contraction of L with the symmetry, delta, with the variation of the Lagrangian with the symmetry. But this variation is given by E plus d theta. And now we see, so remember that E, let me write it maybe here in small. Just a reminder, this E was delta phi times some function of phi and derivatives and so on. Usually second order derivatives. Okay, so, but it's a source form. It's just proportional to delta phi as such, without derivatives in front of it. So when we contract it, we just get the variation of phi along the symmetry. So this is delta xi of phi contracted with equations of motion component by component. Plus, now these can go inside. Remember that the contraction in field space does not really see anything about the derivatives in spacetime, except that there must be a sign, because and so this is what we get, and we are done. So we just compare the first and the last term, and we say that d of j, because it's this plus that, is equal to, we even know what it is equal to exactly, will be equal to this, which of course vanishes on shell because that is zero on shell. It's just proportional to the equations of motion. Okay. So these, now we will see a couple of examples, but this is the result that tells you, we saw it in also in classical mechanics, of course, in a more pedestrian language. But it was the same thing. So we have a symmetry of the Lagrangian, and then we get conserved quantities out of it. How do we compute these quantities? Well, we say the Noether charge Q sigma of xi is nothing else than the integral of j by definition. This is independent of sigma. This is if in the case this is a closed Cauchy surface. Otherwise, what we get is that there is a potential outflux and there is a leakage of the charge. So with boundaries, so this is like an open system. What can happen is that we have so this is sigma in, sigma final. Then M is inside here. And this is our B. Of course, we know that sigma final minus, let me write it like this, sigma final xi minus sigma initial xi will be the outflux along the time-like boundary of J. So this is more like a balance law versus a conservation law, which is saying that this is independent of sigma. So this is a very general way of talking about conservations, where you're not saying it's conserved in time, it's conserved with respect to any possible slicing of your spacetime. So if here I was to take a slicing like that, I would find like the same, it wouldn't matter when it did the same result. Okay.
Aldo, could you, yeah. What did you say about the boundary of the sigma?
Oh, maybe here there's a minus. Yeah?
So Z holds provided the boundary of sigma vanishes or something?
So here this b is delta sigma cross the time interval. Is this what you were asking? So if there's no boundary,
this is what you said about that part.
Yeah. So if there is no boundary of sigma, this is a situation where I have maybe I have a closed universe that is evolving to the same closed universe, maybe in a different shape, whatever. But the charge has nowhere to go. So it's this integral. There's no outflux, and so the charge is conserved. So if you want, you can think of electric charges. That's perfectly, or energy momentum. This would be the final electric charge integrated over my surface, hypersurface. Is equal to the initial charge minus what has gone out of the system. So this is what is leaking through the boundary of the system. Okay. I will give a couple of examples in a moment, but I want to get to the end of the story first. The end of the story is to say, okay, we have checked that our symmetries preserve the equations of motion, so we can pull them back in a way to the covariant phase space. We have found that for every symmetry, there is a conserved current. Now, what we want to, the last piece we miss is to put to consider what happens to our Hamiltonian flow equation. So what is the relationship between this conserved current and the flows in phase space? So we know, for example, that angular momentum generates rotation in via the Poisson bracket. Is this generic? Can we always do that? So this is the last piece of the triangle, in a way. For this, I need the technical lemma, which I will not prove. So the question that I want to answer is the following. Does Q sigma psi is the Hamiltonian generator of my symmetry, where in the covariant phase space. This is a very natural question at this point. So to prove it, I need a technical lemma, which, the proof of it is even harder than the previous one, and I will not go into any details. But it says the following. Suppose, let's see if I want to say things right. So suppose S is a top minus 1, comma 1 form, and let that vanishes on shell. Then there exists an R, which is a top minus 2, form such that S is equal to dr on shell. So the difficulty of this proof is the fact that we are on shell. And as I said in the previous lecture, the space of on shell fields doesn't really have good locality properties, because if you do a perturbation to your fields at some point in spacetime, these perturbations will propagate. So you have to keep track of these propagations. And so a priori, it's just, it's not a, for this reason, it cannot be the space of section of some bundle over spacetime. And therefore, you lose all the technology that you could apply in those circumstances. So, and this is what complicates matters here. But, so this is why it's hard. The reason why this works at the end of the day is the following. So one has to appreciate what is the subtlety of this theorem. We are saying that this is true no matter what the topology of M is. So I'm not saying that the top minus one cohomology of M is trivial, right? So if it was trivial, this would be always be true. Any closed form would be exact. But I'm saying nothing about the cohomology. Nothing about of M. So the reason why it works is because here I have, this is a one form. If this was a zero form, it would not work. But it would work also if it was a two form, three form, but not a zero form. And so the catch is that this is a one form, if you want a k larger than one form. And it should also be, I believe, smaller than n. Well, so let me just say, probably if it was a top form, it wouldn't work. I'm not completely sure, I would have to check. But this is a one form in field space on F. So the idea, the very fluffy idea, is that since this has to be true for every possible variation, I'm allowed to contract it with any possible variation, no matter which support this has. Any compact support variation would have to still satisfy this. This is a very strong requirement. And this is where you can get this out of. So there is a free slot here. And it's this free slot that allows you to conclude this. So this is S, which is S of phi, et cetera, but also delta phi. And this is completely free. Of course, it's free on shell. That's where things get hard. But that's why it is. It can work in the first place. OK. Supposing that this lemma holds, now we can give a proof of the theorem. Proposition. We need first this result. So again, we have rho g a Lagrangian symmetry. Then the point is that there exists an R of this form. So this is top minus 2 comma 1 form. I want it slightly more general because I have always this G sitting around. such that I rock psi of omega is equal to minus delta j plus this boundary term. Up to equations of motion. OK, we can prove this. Uh, Again, this is one of these other tricks. We just write the same thing in two different ways. In this case, the one that is, let's see. We define, we can define S minus delta R. Then, well, I can do it. If you want to do it more constructive, you start from this. But now we write this in using Cartan's formula. So we split this into two pieces. So this is equal to I rho psi delta theta, which is nothing else than omega, plus the other one. And this we can, I suppose here I want a plus arc psi. And this was, by definition, J. So this becomes nothing else than I rho psi omega plus delta J. Okay, we're almost done. Now remember, both of these objects are conserved on shell. Recall, D of J is conserved on shell, and so is D of omega is conserved on shell. Therefore, from these two, we see that DS is conserved on shell, just because of this equality. So if I take D here, the D goes inside, and I get D of each. Going on shell, I find zero. Using the lemma, I find that S on shell is dr. And so I'm done. OK? Does it make sense? I find this equal to dr. OK, why? So this is particularly nice. Why? Because we say now, this is the theorem now becomes a simple consequence of this equation. The theorem answers to our question, which is that Q is the Hamiltonian generator. Which hypothesis do we need? We need the hypothesis that there are no boundaries again. So it's exactly when Q is conserved, Q is also the Hamiltonian generator. We say G rho, as usual, is a Lagrangian symmetry. Then we add the hypothesis that d sigma is equal to 0. Then and this is just obtained by integrating the previous proposition. Proof, integrate previous proposition over sigma with no boundaries so that we can get rid of So this concludes the discussion of the first Noether theorem in this extended sense, where we have added symplectic geometry into the picture. There is one small catch, which I will not discuss, and it is the following. You see, when we define R over there, this reminder of R is like as for remainder, when we take the variation of the Lagrangian gas, this boundary remainder, is always defined up to something else, because there is a D in front. So if I add to R D of something, whatever, it will still be a valid R. The question is whether this charge is sensitive to that extra piece that I'm putting there. And since I'm integrating over a surface without boundaries, it's not. So it's non-ambiguous. This Q is just fully, completely, unambiguously defined by my Lagrangian. There is another subtlety, which is maybe even more subtle, which is that the Lagrangian itself a priori is defined up to boundary pieces. And these also go away in Q. So Q is, if you're interested in seeing why, but I can do it in my office, but I just want to mention that Q sigma for sigma without boundaries is unambiguously defined from the equivalence class of Lagrangian up to boundary Lagrangians. Okay. This is not true if there are boundaries of sigma, though. So an example that we saw in classical mechanics was the angular momentum of the electromagnetic field. There are different there were these improved stress energy tensors and so on. They were all differing by a total divergence, and these will appear in these boundary pieces. So I don't know if you remember that, but okay. So any questions?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's a bit confusing. So somehow we can have a Lagrangian with potential boundary terms. The stigma has no boundary. So what do these boundaries
mean? No. So the boundary in the Lagrangian is of M.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's not the same, a priori not the same boundary.
So we can have M with boundary?
So if you have something like this, a sphere, three sphere cross an interval, you have a space-time with boundaries, the initial and final spheres, three spheres, but the spheres have no boundaries. But it's just a check, because when you define mechanics cares only really about the equations of motion, not really about the theta. So any conserved charges should not know anything about that, the theta, and because you can build them without, in fact, they just depend on the equations of motion in a way. So you still want to make sure that what you're defining here is consistent with this more basic picture that where you start, where one started from. Okay, one remark. You remember I said again in one of the first lectures that if you have a symplectic potential and the vector field that preserves it, then you get a Hamiltonian vector field for free, and you know the Hamiltonian generator. So here is true as well. So I call this the best case scenario. The best case scenario is when if the symmetries preserve the symplectic potential, then immediately you get, by using Cartan's formula, you get this equation. nj for j xi equal and this is true off shell at that point. If this is true only on shell, then it would be on shell. But it all depends on what kind of equality one gets here. So the reason I'm saying this is because in practical application, it often happens that one is in this situation. So it's useful for practical purposes. And in fact, if you read the literature, sometimes this is what is called the neuter charge. And then, but it's a bit improper in the sense that the full one should be with the that boundary term, the remainder. But since this is a naive ansatz for the neuter charge, then you can correct it in a sense. Okay, so what we gained is the following. We have Lagrangian symmetries, which give us both conserved charges. And in a way, they give us as well. So the same conserved charges are also the symmetry generator. Covariant okay. So this is what we discussed today. We started from Lagrangian symmetries and pulled out all of these extra bonus stuff. Okay, so I conclude with a couple of examples. So let's take particle mechanics to start from. It's always a good idea. We have a Lagrangian that depends on minus, maybe. Okay, let me do it a bit more. Q dot square alpha minus the sum alpha less than beta of V Q alpha Q beta. So we have a bunch of particles interacting through a potential which is central. Depends only on the distance. Now, theta for this Lagrangian is just, one can read it off there. It's q dot dot delta q. And this is a 0-1 form. Now, let's consider rotations as a symmetry. What do rotations do? Well, they rotate every particle independently. And they are x, I, j, k, xi, I, q, alpha, j, d over d, q, alpha, k. Maybe I should write it like this. OK. With an integral in dt if I want to be fully precise. Okay. Because this is the same psi at all possible t's. Now, it's easy to check, in fact, that we are in this situation where theta is preserved because clearly q dot, since here everything is independent of xi, q dot rotates in the same way as q, and so this is conserved. We also know that, in fact, I should have done this first maybe, the Lagrangian itself is fully is fully conserved. And then we get that we are in the best case scenario. Sorry, maybe I should have also added that the Lagrangian is exactly invariant there. So we have this our two hypotheses, best case scenario, and J Xi is equal to, we just compute it like this, in theta. Theta, I plug this in, it becomes Q dot epsilon Xi Q, which is the sum over Xi dot Q times Q dot. Up to signs, which I'm not checking. So this is the angular momentum. In the direction Xi. Okay? Does this make sense? Well, here I'm running out of time, but quickly, the second example is the scalar, massless scalar field. Which gives us let me write it like this. Epsilon. So in this case, what is the symmetry? The symmetry in this case is delta Xi of phi at x is Xi. I can add a number to my field, and since there is always a gradient in a nabla in front, it just changes. So this is Xi is in R. So the exercise is to check that we are in best case scenario, which is super easy. The Lagrangian is obviously invariant, and theta will be q dot delta q, and it will also be invariant. But you can check it. It's good. And then you find that the current in this case is just Xi dA phi. So in a way, it's just the momentum of the field. This is maybe a little artificial. A slightly more interesting example, in fact, which I invite you to do, is to do this case you can do also massive complex Klein-Gordon field, scalar field, and consider the symmetry to be of phi I Xi phi, right? The change of phase. If you do this and you compute the current, so you can check again that you're in the best case scenario, so it's easy. And I invite you to compute the current, which is something that you've seen 1 million times in different places. Okay, next time I want to do space-time translation symmetry, any space-time symmetry for a scalar field as a more complex example, is a bit more sophisticated, and then move on to Noether 2, gauge symmetries.